The Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners and more payouts than any other site. Enter promo code MEDIA at FanDuel.com for a bonus match of up to $200. We're also sponsored by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal. Pay for your ticket and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app and enter our code MEDIA for $20 off your first purchase.
And a friend of mine texted me and said, Stern just went off on you, right? So I'm thinking, it's David Stern. And I'm like, why is the former commissioner? And they said, called me, I think it was like something like a douchebag or something. I don't know what the exact word, but it was something that was, I said to myself, like, man, that commissioner went low with that. So, and I didn't know what it was about. So I get out of the movie and I find out it's Howard Stern. But I tell you one thing, I think he said he was going to punch me in the face. I said, that would be a great, neither one of us would be confused with Ronda Rousey, okay? So that fight, if it was on pay-per-view provision, wouldn't draw a lot of people because he probably got beat up on the playground, and I know I took my share of shots on the playground as well.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media about their process. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer today is Alan Kim. And our guest this week is the ESPN NBA analyst, Jeff Van Gundy, who joined that network in 2007 and now serves as the analyst for the finals on ABC, the conference finals. He does, obviously, regular season games and playoff games for that network, works with Mark Green and Mark Jackson, primarily one of the fun and best broadcasting teams out there, regardless of sport. Jeff Van Gundy, as NBA fans know, was the coach of the Rockets and the Knicks prior to his broadcasting. He also worked for TNT for a little bit as well. So he has now been in broadcasting for a while. It's pretty interesting. You know, you think of him as an NBA coach, but he's been a broadcaster now for some time. My thanks for the great feedback on our previous guests, from Scott Hansen of the NFL Network and Red Zone to Jalen Rose, Jim Miller and the Grantland Conversation. The numbers off that were incredible. The WWE's great Mike Mastro, Paul Heyman, Fox Sports 1's, or FS1's, Jay Onright. Upcoming guests will include Jay Billis of ESPN, Andres Cantor, the great soccer announcer, and I'm working on a couple of other things, but I think those two, Billis and Cantor, are booked. I'm really looking forward to talking to Jeff Van Gundy. I'm really interested in his process. He's always asked a million questions about basketball, but I'm very curious as to how he prepares for his broadcasts and how much self-evaluation he does. Does he watch tapes? Who he reads in terms of the reporters in the NBA to stay current? What the pregame meetings are for him with coaches? And we'll get into some fun stuff too, including Howard Stern calling out Jeff Van Gundy. Okay, and as promised, we bring in Jeff Van Gundy, the fine ESPN NBA analyst who has now called the finals and major playoff games for that network for a long time. You don't think of Jeff Van Gundy anymore as a new broadcaster. He is part of, for lack of a better word, part of the broadcasting establishment. Jeff, thank you very much for being a guest on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, Jeff, first off, who has had the biggest impact on you regarding broadcasting and why?
Well, I think Marv Albert had a huge impact on me getting into broadcasting. I don't think TNT, once I left the Knicks, would have hired me if not for his push. So I'm extremely indebted to him and Mike Fratello, that first round of broadcasting that I did was eye-opening. I learned greatly from them, and they were so open to a third person being with them. And so, like, I'm indebted to them for that. And then I think, I'd have to mention a guy that I went long back with, Mike Pearl, who was at TNT. Then he moved to ABC. He got me in the door to ABC and ESPN. And then I think finally, I'm overwhelmingly indebted to Mike Breen and Mark Jackson for opening up their tandem to me. And Mike really has given me great feedback and insight, as has our producer, Tim Corrigan, about how to be better at what we do. And I'm not as serious a broadcaster as they are. And so sometimes their level of commitment and their teaching points have really helped me.
That's interesting, Jeff. I didn't know Marv Albert had that role. Did you had you developed a relationship with him when you were coaching the Knicks and he was broadcasting the Knicks? Is that where that relationship took place?
No, absolutely not. That's the funny part, Richard, is that back with the Knicks, there was very, very little interaction between coach and broadcasters of the home team. It wasn't like we had a show. They traveled with us, but they were in a different section. And, you know, Marv, and I get it now, I didn't get it then, was the anti-homer. You know, he was as critical of us as he was of the opponent, which when you're coaching, it's hard to understand that. When you're broadcasting, you absolutely understand that. So it wasn't like Marv to me was, we were certainly not close at all. And I wouldn't say from my press conferences back then that you would say I was anything but a little bit dour or serious minded. So I don't know what he saw in me that had him recommend me to TNT. But whatever it was, I'm extremely grateful. And like I said, like they went out of their way. I was a total newbie to the industry. And I still remember my first game, you know, they said, what are you going to say in the open? I had no idea what they were talking about. I had no idea about anything they were talking about. It was like a foreign language, but they brought me along and, you know, really, really helped me get into the business and start to learn the business.
Jeff, as specific as you can, and you can certainly go as long as you want, how do you prepare for each broadcast that you do?
Well, again, I think I'm a little bit simpler. I was huge on film study and statistical study when I coached. I'm less inclined statistically as a broadcaster. I look at the numbers, I know the numbers, but I rarely use them because I just, from a broadcasting sense, I leave that to Mike most times, or the play-by-play announcer, whoever I'm working with on that given night. But I do watch a lot of NBA basketball. I have a good network of coaches that I am close to that I think will tell me the truth about their teams versus what they tell the media in general, being very positive about their team. They'll tell me strengths and weaknesses. So I think without revealing where the information is coming from, I think I have a pretty good handle on the players, on teams, and how they're going to exploit them. And so I would say it's more watching games and it's more talking to coaches.
Jeff, what are the hours like before a game broadcast for you? How early do you arrive at the arena? I know most broadcasters who do national games like you usually meet with the coaches at some point. Maybe they meet with players, maybe not. Usually the coaches are a definite. So can you give the listeners a sense of what time you would arrive at the arena and then what your preparation in arena is like prior to broadcast?
Well, I think we're a lot different from football in that it seems to me from what I've talked with football broadcasters, their days and even the day before is so much more scripted. So for us, Mike Breen loves to get there like 3 hours early to eat the media dining room food. Mark and I would prefer to go there about an hour and a half before the game. So we usually compromise at about 2.5 hours, 2:15. And then you're right. If we haven't been able to meet with the coaches right after morning shoot around. We'll meet with the coaches there. And again, same with the players. They'll usually pick out a player or two to try to get on camera. But you know what's interesting, Richard? We put them on camera, and then we rarely use the footage in-game that we get. I think it's more so for all the other platforms of ESPN where those things get used much more than in-games. It used to be when I was coaching, you would see a lot more of those sound bites used in-game. And I don't know if it's because of commercial times getting squeezed, or when you're coming back in from commercial, you don't have as much time, but it doesn't seem like in-game we use that stuff much at all.
Jeff, when I knew you were going to be a guest, I put it out on Twitter to ask people some questions if they had for you. We'll get to those at the end. But one that just comes up here, because you mentioned it, there's a reader, Brandon Anderson, who asked if there were any current players who, when you've met with them or when you've interviewed them, do they immediately pop out as people who would really be successful in broadcasting? For example, I don't know if he would do it, but Kobe Bryant always strikes me as somebody who, if he decided to go into broadcasting, would almost be a can't-miss guy.
Well, I thought, you know, I think that's a good name. I think Steve Nash, he worked with us one quarter when he was still with the Lakers, but hurt a couple years back. I think he would be outstanding. But a lot of these guys, I just don't know if they want that strict a schedule, or if they want to do something different. You know, it's like anything else. You got to want to stay in the game in some way to either coach or broadcast. And so I'm not sure that's where their interests lie, but I think those two guys would be very good. I'm trying to think of somebody off the top of my head that people wouldn't think of that I think would be good too. And, you know, I think Chris Paul would be very good as well. I think he's got opinions. I think he's smart. I think he has experiences both as a player and with the Players Association that would give him a lot of necessary information. And I also think he would speak his mind. I think so much of it is, are you willing to say what you think versus, you know, hold back? And I think every announcer, Richard, holds back because they don't say everything they think. But you have to give the listeners somewhat of what they think. I've always thought there should be a different channel about, like, whether it's the Olympics or the NBA or the NFL, whatever the coverage is, where you got the real deal versus, you know, the somewhat parsed reality of what the NBA or that game is presenting.
So you're paying extra for like a transparency channel, basically.
Yeah, where you tell all the truth, not 80% or 70%. You tell it all.
That'd be a popular channel. I like that. How much self-evaluation, Jeff, do you do on your broadcasting at this point? Will you rewatch tapes that you've done? Do you, you know, at some networks, the broadcasters get notes after each game. That's probably more of an NFL thing than an NBA thing. But depending on what network you work at, there sometimes is a ton of feedback, and then including self-feedback, and then at other networks, that's not the case. So how much self-evaluation do you get, or how much evaluation do you get from your management?
Well, one of the best things Mike Breen told me initially when I went into broadcasting, way back with TNT, he said, you have to find someone who'll tell you the truth, because most people who are working with announcers will, after every broadcast, say the same thing. Great job, great job, great job, until you're fired. And so he said, you got to find somebody who will tell you the truth. And so for me, it has been Mike Breen. And in my first year with TNT, Scooter Vertino, who's now not producing, I think he runs, you know, all of NBA basketball at TNT.
Right.
He would absolutely give me notes because I asked for it. In coaching, you're used to giving feedback and getting feedback. I think in broadcasting, people are more reluctant to tell you what you need to do to improve. But Scooter did it for me at TNT. Mike has always done it throughout my time. And when I screw up, you know, where I say something inappropriate, you know, Tim Corrigan will step in and tell me, you know, you went too far. That wasn't necessary. Think about this. And then you get more feedback as you get into the more important games in the NBA, in the playoffs, and then all the way through up until the finals.
Jeff, as your decade now working in broadcasting shifted how you think about the media versus how you thought about the media when you were a coach, and if so, how?
Absolutely. I think number one, as I mentioned before, I didn't really understand why Marv played it straight down the middle all the time when he was the Knick broadcaster until I went into broadcasting. And I get it because the game dictates what you say. You know, it's not like you go in, you can't say to your listeners or viewers that good is bad and bad is good. You have to tell the truth. And so I really wasn't as in tune to that. You know, I wanted the homer broadcasters back when I was with the Knicks, and, you know, it didn't happen. And so I think that's one area. I think, two, if I ever do go back to coaching, I'll be much less sensitive to what people say. You can't win the battle. When you coach, you keep the media at arm's length, you know, from practices to travel on the plane. You then can't expect them, if you do keep them at arm's length, to know everything about what they're talking about. You can't have it both ways. So the more arm's length you keep at, you know, the media, the more they're going to speculate. And I frankly, right now, Richard, I am really annoyed at how we cover, particularly the NBA. It may be other sports. I don't pay attention as much. No one will put their name to anything anymore. Everything is sources. It's drama filled. It's very little analysis of the games itself. And so I think maybe we brought that upon ourselves by not allowing people or the media to travel with us. But there's so many more media now, too, that it's hard to get to know them all.
Would you, Jeff, if you coached again, would you open up places within the organization to the media that maybe other teams right now would not?
Well, I tell you, I think I would. I think if the organization was for it and you had enough space for members of the media that cover you on a daily basis, I definitely would say travel. Because, you know, one thing, you get to know them better, maybe. They get to know your players. Maybe that brings a benefit of the doubt if they see something. I think most people would know in the media not to report on something that happens on the plane if some incident occurred. But also, when you can help somebody to travel easier, why wouldn't you now go out of your way to try to help the media that covers you daily, you know, not have to deal with the headaches of everyday travel? So I think I would do that. And, you know, again, I would hope that organizationally and staff wise, if I coached again, that there would be no sensitivities to how you're covered.
Jeff, because your name gets thrown out there as a potential coaching candidate, and because obviously you're a coach at heart and there still may be another place that you'd like to coach at, do you feel that you self-censor yourself at all on the air? Because I think you are smart enough to know that if you do go to a certain place, you could potentially offend a future boss, a future player that you'll coach with, a future assistant coach that might be on your staff. But I realize also that's a tricky compromise because you want to be honest with the viewer. So I guess I'm asking directly, do you find that you have to self-censor yourself because there's a potential for going back in the league?
Well, I don't think it's as much self-censoring to get a job. I think it's more self-censoring to try to stay away from areas that could impact your present employment. You know, you can only go so far telling the truth about what you think about the league office. You can only go so far talking about issues that directly impact the business of ESPN. And so as far as evaluation of players and coaches, I actually find that easy because when you're watching a game, a player is either making good plays or he's not making good plays. You don't have to come up with a how you think about an individual. How they're playing is what you're talking about. Coaching moves that are happening are what you're talking about. So I don't find it self-censoring in that way, trying to, you know, stay in the good graces of the people who are doing the hiring. But I do think you have to be aware as a broadcaster about staying away from certain topics, which they always tell you at ESPN. I don't think I have them all, but like politics, race, religion, sexuality. I know there's more, but they always say stay away from that stuff. But you also have to stay away from things that impact ESPN and ABC directly. And, you know, the league still wields great power. And they don't have final say on who's broadcasting or who's not broadcasting, but they do have a say.
Right.
And so you do have to be aware of what you say in regards to that. And, you know, certainly I think Adam Silver has shown that he's very open to transparency and to different opinions, which is a definite change for all that cover the NBA.
Jeff, how often have you heard from the league office about something you've said on the air over the years?
Well, I don't hear from them directly, really. I think it goes from the league to Tim Corrigan to me. And I think, again, some people, you know, Tom Corelli a couple times has had a couple things that, you know, he's gone to Mike Breen about that he didn't agree with. I'm not sure that's a total league thing or if that's just an individual concern that he had. So, I don't really know. It's not that often. I think a couple times the Commissioner Stern wasn't real happy with some of the things I said.
Right.
And I heard through intermediaries like Tim Corrigan about that, but nothing too bad.
Jeff Van Gundy is the guest on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. We'll take a quick break. Be right back. There's a reason the entire sports week builds up to NFL Sunday. The drama and competition at the highest level are unmatched. And now with FanDuel.com, you can get in on the action. There are thousands of leagues on FanDuel that cost as little as $1 to enter, and you can cash out in the very same night that you win. Now, when you use my code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, at FanDuel.com, you can get a bonus match of up to $200. FanDuel is the leader in one-week fantasy football with more winners and more payouts than any other site. They pay out over $75 million a week this football season. Over 1 million people have won money playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Now it's your turn. If you're watching the games anyway, try out FanDuel.com. Go to FanDuel.com. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and use the code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, and sign up now. Here's a special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. The offer is only good for the first 50 people that use the code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, today, so don't get left out. FanDuel also offers daily fantasy baseball, basketball, and hockey. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Try it out today. All right, back with Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff, how do you think the broadcast handled the Golden State run last year with Mark in the booth, obviously being the former coach of that team?
Well, I think, first of all, Mark handled it like I would have thought he would, which is straightforward. And he talked about what was happening in the game. And I think his obviously insights into their team from what guys do well and what they don't do well was very, very helpful for everybody. And listen, you don't like every player the same that you have coached along the way. But I don't think if you watch the broadcast, you could tell that who Mark really liked and who necessarily he didn't enjoy as much. And so I thought he did an outstanding job with that, which was, it's a very difficult situation. I also thought the Warriors did a terrific job with it. Steve Kerr in particular, Bob Myers, unbelievable job of recognizing what he meant to the Warriors and their progress, but not making it at all awkward for Mark or any of us to be doing the broadcast as they made that great run to their championship. So I thought it was very well handled by everyone involved.
Jeff, you know, you bring up Steve Kerr, and this is sort of interesting to me, and I'm not sure honestly what the answer is, but can broadcasting at all help prepare you to coach in the league? Steve obviously was a broadcaster for many years with Turner and a terrific one, and then obviously went to Golden State and had, you know, an incredible coaching success. Now, without broadcasting, Steve may have done that as well, but being in that position, is there – maybe it's just seeing the players on an every year basis, but can broadcasting in any form or shape help one in terms of coaching?
The only one I think it could help you with is that if you're too mired into thinking that NBA basketball is so important, stepping away and watching from afar, I think can give you a better perspective maybe that the world doesn't end on wins and losses. But I've always been, if you want to be good at something, you know, do that. If you want to continue to improve, if you want to coach better, coach. Now, that doesn't mean you can't come from the broadcast booth and do very well. We've seen a number of examples, Doc Rivers, Steve Kerr, you know, right away, no coaching experience, hop in and do outstanding jobs. But I think they will tell you they got better and better the more they do it. And I think if you really want to be good, you do that and you concentrate and you try to improve. And I think you can make the jump back and forth. But I think the big thing, Richard, is whatever you're in at that moment, be committed totally to that.
Jeff, you've worked in both two-person booths and three-person booths. For each one specifically, how do you approach working on each one?
Well, I think two-person booth, you have to do more, obviously. You have to talk more. I enjoyed the three-person booth more than I think most do. I really enjoy, I think a lot of when you're doing a second career, the level of enjoyment goes directly to enjoying who you work with. And so when I get the chance to work with, you know, friends like Mike and Mark, who I've known for over half my life, it makes it really, really enjoyable. And I like the interactions between us three, because I think you would get the same thing if you were sitting down watching a game as we were eating dinner. So I do like the three-person booth. I think you have to, in the three-person booth, make sure not every second is filled with talking. So you have to take a step back, not only to let the other people have a chance to talk, but also sometimes where there's absolutely no talk. And I think Tim Corrigan has said this to me time and time again, two or three man booth. No one is complaining when announcers aren't speaking.
Right.
So feel free to let a game breathe. Feel free to just not analyze every single play. You see it in football. I think we see it in basketball sometimes, myself included, where you're just talking too much about something that's already self-explanatory that no one needs explained.
Jeff, are there particular reporters or writers that you read on a daily or weekly basis to stay current about the league?
Well, I read Woj all the time. I think what I also do is a guy who used to work with ESPN named Peter Newman, hasn't worked there for a few years. He has a service where you pay $50 for the whole year and he puts together all this stuff every day on the NBA. Hmm. And so for $50, I get an email, two emails a day, every day about everything that's going on in the NBA. So to me, more so than reading just Woj, I read all the articles about all the teams and any other statistical things that he sends out. And so it's really a quality product, and it really eliminates a lot of wasted time, you know, searching around. So, yeah, that's what I do usually.
Interesting. So that's basically an email that lands in your inbox every morning.
Right. I think it's called All Ball or something like that. All Ball 365. Oh, wow. And like you said, it's like you pay $50 for the whole year. And so you get two emails a day, every day of the year. And it's all the clips from different cities and all their articles and different NBA articles. And so it's been very helpful.
Jeff, of all the stories about you, one of my favorites is when Howard Stern went off on you for calling him out for leaving early. When you now that you've had a little bit of time to reflect on that, do you ever sort of still find it amazing how your words can sort of carry into popular culture as they did in the case of Stern, who obviously is a very famous guy?
Yeah, it was very interesting because I still remember I was sitting at a movie theater. And you know you're a loser when you're the only person at the 11 a.m. showing of whatever movie it was.
Right.
Right. And so that was me. I was the only person in the theater. And a friend of mine texted me and said, Stern just went off on you. Right. So I'm thinking it's David Stern. And I'm like, why is the former commissioner? And they said, called me, I think it was like something like a douchebag or something. I don't know what the exact word, but it was something that was, I said to myself, like, man, that commissioner went low with that. So, and I didn't know what it was about. So I get out of the movie and I find out it's Howard Stern. And he was on when I was in New York for, you know, ever. But I had thought he had retired. I didn't know he was still on. I guess he's on, I think Sirius, isn't he?
Correct.
Something like that.
Yep.
Right. So he's on Sirius. And I didn't frankly remember saying anything. And I really don't even remember what the tone of my comments were, if they were in a joking manner, or I can't imagine I was trying to be serious about leaving a Knick game when someone is getting blown out. But anyway, it was funny that, you know, he went off like that on me. And I'm thinking it was the former commissioner, David Stern.
Have you two, have you and Howard Stern at all had any kind of interaction since then?
No, I never had interaction with him in my life, so no, I've never spoken to him. But I tell you one thing, I think he said he was going to punch me in the face. I said that would be a great, neither one of us would be confused with Ronda Rousey, okay? So that fight, if it was on pay-per-view provision, wouldn't draw a lot of people because he probably got beat up on the playground. And I know I took my share of shots on the playground as well.
Yeah, but I honestly think, though, given Stern would be involved, that pay-per-view would set a lot of records. So I think if you're looking for a financial payday, Jeff, that could be the one.
No, I don't need to be humiliated on pay-per-vision.
All right, a couple more here. Has one question I got from a reader, Scott Mance, who asked, have any network higher-ups ever told you to change your broadcasting style to become, for lack of a better phrase, more mainstream or more conventional?
No, but I think, you know, for instance, you'll hear, like I mentioned one time, the commissioner's salary, Commissioner Stern's salary, right? I heard about that, you know, from, again, through channels, not directly. I heard from my own people when, you know, when I talked about the Masters.
I remember that.
In what they deemed an inappropriate, you know, way. So they don't really, they don't tell you to, it's not like they're sitting there saying, hey, talk like this or do this. In fact, in my dealings with ESPN, I'm given great freedom and latitude. Incredible. All the way from, you know, John Skipper, John Wildhack, Mark Gross, and Tim Corrigan. That's my management hierarchy. Incredible latitude and freedom. But when I do step out of bounds in their minds, they'll tell me. And when I infringe on business interests of, you know, either ABC, Walt Disney, or ESPN, they'll also let me know. And so there have been a few like that, but nothing where I'd ever feel like, hey, they're not allowing me to speak on what I believe in.
It's interesting because, and these, again, these are my words, but I remember the Masters comment. You stated something that was factual that pretty much everyone in the audience, I think, would agree. Mark Jackson agreed. Augusta's history obviously is out there in terms of not having blacks and women at the club. But, and again, these are my words, I also understand ESPN ABC has a relationship with the Masters. So that's interesting that you referenced that. I'm going to guess, though, Jeff, that you don't, even if management sort of said something to you, you don't regret saying that on the air.
No, I think the tone maybe it had been a little snarky. And I still blame Mike Breen because he led me right into it. Right. He said, I'd love to see Jeff Van Gundy broadcast the Masters. But I think also, no, I don't regret it. I wish there was more time for serious discussion of serious issues. And yet I also realized a lot of the listeners don't care about my take on topics like that.
Right.
But that still doesn't mean I won't give them because I think in some ways it's my obligation when things are brought up to talk directly. Now, the one thing I do regret about that is I knew I had gone maybe out of bounds, and I tried to hurriedly talk about Jack Nicklaus hitting a hole in one on
right.
the par three tournament. Right. And so Mark Jackson rightfully called me out on that I was talking about the Masters, and then I tried to run away from it and go to Jack Nicklaus. So I appreciated Mark holding me accountable.
Yeah, that was good. It was actually, to me, that was an honest moment in broadcasting, so I appreciated that as well. How do you, Jeff, how do you approach when you are commenting on your brother's team? I know it doesn't always happen a lot, but that it has happened in the past. And do you have an approach when you are calling Stan's game that's different than if you were calling, you know, the Lakers or the Thunder or the Bulls, Cavs, et cetera?
Yeah, I think most people would understand this. I remember when I did the finals for him back in Orlando, and they had those really great Orlando teams. I did their games a lot. But in the finals, I found it weird that Mike had to state that I was Stan's brother. Like, I was like, well, the name Van Gundy is not that common,
right.
Number one. But secondly, like, I think every fan would understand, I wanted my brother's team to win without question. And people think that's bias. That's not bias. That's like what you want to happen. But when you're calling the game, and this is what I like about doing live events, again, all you're talking about is what you're seeing on the floor. And so I don't think there has to be a different approach. The one thing I did a little differently, and I don't think it was necessary, but I just felt more comfortable, is I didn't go in with the pregame interviews with the coaches or players when they're playing Stan's team. Because I never want to think that, one, that they have to hold back on what they say, or two, be worried about me running back to the Orlando locker or now the Detroit locker room and talking about what, you know, the players or coaches for the opponent have said. So that's a little bit different. But there's really nothing different once the game starts. Before the game, I'm nervous because I want my brother's team to win. But during the game, again, you're just saying what you're seeing on the floor.
Jeff, you there's a couple of times that you've done some events away from the NBA. I remember you called the women's basketball game that I don't remember if it was Baylor UConn, but it was a big women's basketball game.
It was. Yeah. It was Baylor UConn. It was one of the best events I've ever done.
Right, and so I thought to myself that. Have you asked or are you interested in doing something away from the NBA, even if it's a one-off again, whether it's a college basketball game, whether it would be – I mean, just throw it out there, whether it would be an NFL game or just – have you ever approached your bosses just to try something really uniquely different to give you a different college – I'm sorry, to give you a different broadcasting experience?
Yes, I'm very interested. Last year I did a Virginia basketball game. With Jay Billis and Sean McDonough. I also did the marathon. I did Stephen F. Austin and Northern Iowa. This year I'm doing the ESPN Marathon College, and I've got Dayton and Alabama, which is next Tuesday, the 17th, which I'm really excited for. At one point, Doris was trying to convince me to do the Women's Final Four, and that was very appealing, but it never gained traction for whatever reason, probably because I'm not an expert on women's basketball, and Kara Lawson, Rebecca Lobo, all those people are much more in tune with the game than I am. So I like different. It's just that I think it has to stay basketball because I'm not sure I'm qualified to go in and talk about Little League baseball or, you know, things of that nature, NFL football. Even though it would be a heck of a lot of fun to try.
All right, let's take a quick break from the interview with Jeff Van Gundy, and we'll be back after this. All right, it's been a historic season in the NFL with a couple undefeated teams still remaining. Looking at the Patriots are one of them. It's been an incredibly exciting season, records being broken, records to come as well. And it's been really, really interesting watching the NFL this year. The SeatGeek app still has a ton of ticket options throughout the stadiums in the NFL. And when you use my code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, you can get a check back for $20 to purchase a seat. Here's how it works. You download the SeatGeek app on your iPhone or Android. It's free. Takes a minute to download. Then you search for your event. Find a great deal, enter our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A, and when you complete your purchase, SeatGeek will send you a $20 check to your house. It's that easy. SeatGeek pulls in ticket options from hundreds of sellers online, shows you the best deals automatically. When you shop on SeatGeek, you're seeing virtually every ticket available for your event, all on one page. They rank every available deal with a deal score and show you a color-coded map that's easy to read. Finally, SeatGeek's mobile app makes the ticket buying process seamless, easy, and safe. Store your credit card, and when you find a ticket you want to buy, make the purchase with just two quick taps of your phone. There's no faster way to buy tickets. So, to redeem your promo code and get a $20 check, download the free SeatGeek app today, enter promo code MEDIA in the app. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first SeatGeek purchase. For your NFL, college football, or the best concerts, use the SeatGeek app and our code MEDIA, M-E-D-I-A. I want to welcome Dave Zirin and his show Edge of Sports to the Panoply Network in a news cycle filled with Greg Hardy's misdeeds and things going on involving the Missouri football team, a new Russian doping scandal. Dave offers an unfiltered political take on sports that doesn't hide its head in the sand. Edge of Sports with Dave Zirin. Search for it on iTunes, Stitcher, or find it on panoply.fm. Okay, back in the studio with Jeff Van Gundy. All right, a couple more here. You brought up Doris Burke, who I think the world of and have been writing about for, I would say, nationally longer than anybody. I could, quite frankly, pretty much say that. I was sort of saying that she really had the goods even way back when she was at MSG doing Liberty and the Knicks. You work with her. You know the kind of quality broadcaster she is. I know, Jeff, that you're not the most active person in social media, but do you sort of have an understanding of the kind of, I'll be blunt, the kind of shit that she still takes on social media because she is a woman calling a man's game?
You know, people have mentioned that. I'm not on Twitter or those other forms of social media, but I've known Doris since I was a graduate assistant at Providence College. and she was a player on the women's team. So I've known her forever. First of all, I know what quality of person she is. Second, I think she's the best broadcaster we have in basketball. You think about all she does. So she is able to host the Wednesday night NBA. She does games. She goes over and does college men's games in the ACC. Then she does women's games. I mean, you can't be more versatile than Doris. And it goes right to her work ethic. Her knowledge is expert. She's an expert at the game of basketball. And whether the viewers want to denigrate that because she's a woman is ridiculous. I mean, like, I give that type of criticism no validation. And I'm glad ESPN doesn't either, because let's face it, women have always, in broadcasting and in sports in general, have fought the uphill battle. Doris has opened up so many doors, and she's so good at what she does that I think for any fair-minded viewer, they would tab her an expert, because I know we value her so much. I was saying, like, when she does sideline for us, she shouldn't be known as a sideline reporter, because I saw this with Tom Luganville in college football. They said field announcer.
Right.
When Doris does sideline, it's different than some like media sideline reporters. She should be known as court reporter, because, or, you know, court analyst, whatever it is,
yeah,
because she's at an elevated level. And so I just think the world of her personally. I think she's just a great person, but also the work ethic and the versatility she shows in her broadcasting is phenomenal.
That's well said. And I like that idea to call that on-court analyst, because I think that lets the viewer know that she's elevated in term, just because her vantage point happens to be the sideline, she is an analyst on the sideline. And anybody who knows Doris, going back to her days as a coach at Providence, I mean, she knows the game as good as anybody. So so that's well said. All right, as we finish up here with Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff, you coached against Charles Barkley when you were with the Knicks. Did you and again, I know he wasn't on your team, but you certainly saw enough of him in that conference. Did you have any sense that he would become kind of the broadcasting phenomenon that he has become when you were coaching against him in the league?
Well, the one thing you knew if he went into broadcasting, that he would be a truth teller from his vantage point, and he would be unafraid. What you didn't know is if the league or whoever he broadcasted for would give him the leeway to talk about subjects as bluntly as he does. And I would say this, not everybody gets the same leeway in broadcasting. I think TNT has been very, very smart in giving him latitude,
right,
to talk about subjects that he finds important and that he feels strongly about. And let's face it, every studio show is trying to find the next Barkley, because he's must-see TV. And I think, you know, on ESPN, in the NBA, Jalen Rose has proven to be outstanding. Charles Barkley has done it for so long that he has his own brand, which is, you know, hard to achieve in broadcasting. And I'm thankful that TNT has given him the leeway to speak so forcefully on subjects that he finds truly worthy.
Yeah, that's he probably has, Jeff, honestly, more latitude than any other sports broadcaster that exists today. And, you know, it's on cable, so that helps. But that's why that show sort of is unique, is that Barkley could talk about Ferguson, and then in the next segment he can talk about Durant and Westbrook. And there's almost no sports show at the moment that exists that you can do that, maybe other than inside the NBA.
Yeah, you know what I also like, Richard? It doesn't seem like, first of all, Ernie Johnson is obviously so good at what he does in as a point guard of that show, of just, you know, keeping everyone involved and you know, just making it run so smoothly. But I also like that when you watch that show, it seems like there's no format. And I like that. It's just like a free flow of ideas and exchanges
right.
that happen spontaneously. Now, maybe there is a structure, or maybe it's just for Ernie to, you know, navigate it, as he does. But I like that free flow where they can speak, you know, candidly, and they have, you know, time to speak.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, Jeff, because, knowing that show very well and knowing Charles very well, there are no pre-show meetings, other than Ernie with the producers there. And oftentimes, Charles, Kenny, and Shaq may not even have any kind of conversations before they walk on the air because they just want to react and they want to make it organic. And you're exactly right about that. You've done studio work in the sense that, you know, A block, this person talks, this person talks, this person talks. That show is never like that. There's no designated person who answers a question. And probably that sort of speaks maybe to the brilliance of Ernie Johnson, that he's able to conduct that show where it does at least run on a track, even though it has no formatting, basically.
Right. And I think also, too, is that the chemistry that they have, and we talk about it like on teams, you know, sports teams, continuity and chemistry. Well, they have it on their show because of so many years of being together and figuring out what works for them. And when you speak about no pre-show meetings, Mike Breen is always saying, don't tell me what you're going to say.
Right.
You know, just say what you're going to say. He always thinks it's worse if you've discussed it and you say, this is what I'm going to say, then what are you going to say? And I think he's absolutely right from my limited experiences to go over and have everyone tell you before the show what they're going to say takes away some of the good parts about live TV.
I agree with Breen. See, Jeff, that's his Fordham education showing. Very smart on that thought.
Well, if I hear one more word from him about the brilliance of Fordham's, you know, TV and broadcasting and all the greats, he must think I have memory lapses because he's always listing all the greats who have come out of Fordham.
Right. Vince Scully, Michael Kay, Jack Curry. I'm sure you're getting a lot of that.
No. He always starts with himself. That's the problem with Mike. Yeah.
That's funny. All right. And the final question, Jeff, is that'll be a little bit of sort of a fun hypothetical we'll leave you with. If you had the opportunity to work with any play-by-play person in history and any analyst in history, and I'm going to eliminate Mike and Mark here because you work with them, but just something sort of like totally off the cuff for you, who would you, and it doesn't have to be basketball, but who would you love to at least do one game with all time, living or deceased, as a play-by-play person and as an analyst?
Bill King in basketball. He was a great Warriors announcer.
Yep.
Way back when I was growing up and living in the Bay Area. Yeah, I loved him. Yo-yo dribble. He had all these sayings that you could visualize the game going on. So I would say him. And then without question, Pat Summerall, John Madden. I think I love the Raiders growing up. John Madden, obviously coach, but also he's just an icon. And, you know, I thought Pat Summerall, he said so much by saying so little. I just love their dynamics, listening to them together.
Our guest this week has been the ESPN NBA analyst, Jeff Van Gundy, who has worked at ESPN since 2007. You see him on the finals, conference finals, regular season games. As he mentioned, he's going to be doing some college basketball, which is great news. As someone who covers women's hoops, I hope we see him again do a women's broadcast. That Baylor-UConn game was fun. Jeff, we really appreciate you taking some time on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, and continued success. Thank you.
You got it, Richard. Take care.
All right, back to wrap things up with Alan Kim. And Alan, I know you're a big NBA fan. Van Gundy was interesting in terms of just talking about his you know, sort of preparation for staying current in the league, preparation for broadcasting. He, you know, also alluded to, you know, it's not inconceivable he would get back in coaching as well. But he's really become one of the better sports broadcasters, I think, because he's just authentic and honest. He doesn't sort of try to be something different. And he's not as conventional an analyst as, you know, former Coach X or former Coach Y. And he's found great chemistry with Breen and Jackson. I think that's, you know, I think you can make the argument that that's the best NBA game broadcasting team going. I thought it used to be Albert and Kerr, but I think now that's the best.
Yeah, he's really good. He's kind of like the John Gruden of the NBA. And it's always interesting because he alluded a couple times about getting back into coaching.
Right.
And that means the same thing with Gruden. So
yeah, the question is though, like, I kind of am starting to think Gruden is not going to get back into coaching given he just signed a long-term deal. Van Gundy, I never know, because I think there's a part of Van Gundy that wants to give it. It always seems like to me one more shot if the job is right. His record in the league, obviously, I think his record in the league, you may know this, was like 80 games over 500. I mean, he's a pretty good coach in terms of, obviously came very close to getting to the finals with the Knicks. So it would have to be, obviously, feels like the right fit, you know. If that Laker job comes up though, man, it'd be nice to live in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
But that's not, that team, I think, is a long way away.
Well, once Kobe's off the books, that's a different story.
Yeah, so you have Russell, Randall, and then you got to...
They have a good young core, so...
Figure out the... Can you win a championship with Nick Young?
Yeah, definitely not. But they also have a lot of cap space and the money to spend. And it's the Lakers.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, again, Jeff's been a really good broadcaster. And I think he's honest. You know, even his answer about the Masters. And I remember watching that where he basically just sort of called out the Masters saying, like, you know, forever this place didn't allow blacks and women at the club. And, you know, it was interesting. It was a briefly uncomfortable, interesting broadcast moment, but that was good. Like, it was authentic. And, like, you know, you would, I think most reasonable people would be thinking the same thing Van Gundy did. Doesn't surprise me that he may have heard through the grapevine from ESPN management, because Masters is a very, very important property for them, just in the same way it is for CBS.
Well, I think that's also like the appeal for Barkley. He offers his unfiltered opinion.
Definitely.
So that definitely helps. Yeah. People like that.
Yeah, and Jeff Van Gundy sort of hit on why that show is as great as it is. All right. My thanks to Alan Kim for his excellent production. Bette Marston is the usual producer. She'll be back next week. For Jeff Van Gundy, for Alan Kim, this is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.